All right, take any 10 chickens, any 10 random chickens, not dead ones, but live chickens, and over at the Martin's house. And there will be a pecking order in to the chickens. You know, let's say you have 10 chickens, right? Number one chicken, he's going to eat first. He's going to push the other chickens out of the area. He's going to do this and that. He's going to roost where he wants to roost or whatever he's going to do there, or she. This is a pecking order, and there is a pecking order in every culture, but in chickens, it's really interesting. I was reading yesterday that if you have a group of chickens already and you add new chickens, you could have a major disaster. So they recommend you put those new chickens in another area. They get used to each other. Then you can blend them within a week or so, and they'll create another pecking order. So the pecking order is indefinite. It'll go from one all the way down to 100 chickens, all these chickens. But you have 10 chickens. You have the first chicken's the boss, second chicken's kind of the boss, the third chicken, he's in third place, the fourth all the way down to 9, and then number 9 picks on number 10, and number 10 has nobody to pick on. He's at the bottom of the pecking order. How many of you have ever feel like you are at the bottom of the pecking order? It's true. But, you know, number 10 chicken's got no one to peck. Welcome to the chicken coop, right? This is life. And the world is filled with this kind of cultural competition. And there's a couple examples of it that I want to look at in Mark chapter 9. So let's start in Mark chapter 9. It is really great to see everybody. The assembling of ourselves together is so precious and valuable, and really appreciate each one of you. Mark chapter 9, beginning in verse 33, there was a healing that happened just moments earlier, and then Jesus talks about his life, and he says, the Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men, and they're going to kill him, and after he's killed, he's going to rise up on the third day. They didn't understand what he was saying. They were afraid to ask in verse 32. Verse 33 then starts where we want to look at. It says, they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, what was it that you were disputing among yourselves on the road? And they kept silent, for on the road they had disputed among themselves who would be super chicken. They were thinking about who of them was going to be number one. Who is going to be the greatest? Now, you imagine having a conversation with your friends, and you know you're wondering, like, which one of us here? It's probably going to be, you know, it's obvious who the choice is going to be. You know, it should be kind of obvious to everyone who is super chicken. You have this conversation with one another, and they're actually disputing. The word for dispute there is they're having an argument among themselves. You say, no, this doesn't happen in real life. Have you ever worked for a company? You know, there's disputing going on about whose territory is this, who's responsible. No, no, you can't. Don't you touch that area. That's my thing. I'm the chicken in that, you know, territory. Coop. This is my coop. Stay out of my coop. And you know, you have that. And sometimes you have that in churches. Hey, that's my thing. You know, I remember I was in one church. I wasn't in the church. I was visiting the church with a friend. And there was a discussion about light bulbs. And literally the conversation came up. So listen, you can't just change that bulb. You got to talk to so-and-so. He does the bulb. And I'm looking at, there's a bulb. I can see the light bulb that would go in that socket, right? It's there. It could go there. No. We can't change the bulb because there's a chicken that puts that bulb in. And he's the one. And if you touch that bulb, you're going to get pecked like you've never been pecked before. He'll peck your eye out. This is in a church. You will have a discussion at a deacon's meeting. there will be a vote, and then we'll change light bulbs at the appropriate. That bulb, it may not be time. It's out. Literally, you cannot touch that thing unless that particular bird was involved. So it does happen, no question about it. And there is a dispute. Imagine the embarrassment. What were you guys talking about? Jesus turns to you. So what were you guys talking about back there? He knew. Well, we were just talking. They'd even tell him. They couldn't even bring them. Imagine the embarrassment being asked that question. It says, they kept silent. Hey, that's good. That's probably a good thing. They should have been keeping silent a little bit earlier, but they kept silent. For on the road they disputed among themselves who would be the greatest. He sat them down and called the 12 and said, if anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all. And say this next line, servant of all. What's a servant look like today? Who is the servant today? What does a servant look like? And to whom should I be a servant? Well, it's defined here. The three-letter word all in the original language, exegeted and expanded into various scholarly studies, means all. It means everybody. You're going to serve everybody. You're going to serve and be great by service. You're going to be great by serving. You're going to be fulfilled by serving. You're going to be fantastic by serving. Who am I going to serve? You're going to serve Derek. Then you're going to serve Sue. You're going to serve John. You're even going to serve Amanda. And then you're going to serve Glenn. And then you serve a Martin. Pick one. And rather than strutting around in the coop, I'm going to serve all the other chickens. I'm going to look around. I'm going to say, all these people need something from God. All these other people need my encouragement. They need my love. They need forgiveness. They need to overcome shame. There's some people in this room have never overcome the shame of your past. I've been praying about this the last couple weeks. Some of you have never overcome the shame of your past. You have a scarlet mark on you that you will not allow God to wash off you. You bear it everywhere you go. You bear it in your thoughts. And when you brush up against your calling or you come close to making the next step in your life, that shame holds you back. We can serve each other by reminding each other about the grace of God. You know, when you confess your sin to God, you have no past. How many of you believe that? I want you to think of this tonight, this morning. You have no past. Maybe you've had an abortion. Let me just, because I don't know. But let me just, if you have and you've gone to God with that, you have no past. And your reunion with your child is going to be incredibly glorious. You have no past. Wonder today, you know, there's certain places you go. If you've had a divorce, you're some kind of second class Christian. I mean, you're just not even, you can't serve, you can't be a deacon, you certainly can't preach. The church in Massachusetts that I was part of, if you were divorced, you couldn't even stand up and take the offering or publicly pray. Very legalistic. Apparently, that church did not believe that the sins were washed away by Calvary's flood. Apparently, the blood, it was not enough for that church. Is the blood enough for you? Do you just see the blood of Christ with regards to your past? When you look back, what do you see? David saw surely goodness and mercy, all three of them. He saw goodness and mercy follow me. He said, I am positive that goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. Isn't that interesting? I'm going to look back every day behind me. What happened earlier yesterday? What happened the day before? When I look back there, I don't see this horrific, terrible past that haunts me. I look back and I see goodness, the goodness of God who kept blessing me, and the mercy of God who did not hold those things against me and did not even allow the consequences of my past to take its full effect. Because the Bible says, if God would remark iniquities, who would stand? Hello? See, serving is the finished work communicated to one another. That's the highest form of serving. It's the highest form of serving. It's just unconditional love and the finished work toward one another. So they're having this argument, and Jesus takes a little child. Whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me. Whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me. I was in the church in Rome, and there was a couple guys coming from Baltimore, and they were going to discuss with the church how to start a bus ministry. How to get it started. How do you... You're going to rent some buses. You're going to go into some neighborhoods. So they took us out. We knocked on doors. And we went into one of the most difficult, troubled areas in Rome. And we knocked on those doors. And we met many parents, many people. And we said, listen, we would love to pick up your child on a Saturday morning and bring him to a Sunday school type place, you know, different classes. We're going to have fun, we're going to have a snack, and we're going to pick them up in this bus. But what I didn't understand at the time was how critical the ride of the bus was. Because you have to pick up one child from this neighborhood, maybe pick up three more kids from this area, pick up three more kids in this area, and then there's a 15-minute ride to the church. Now, what in the world are you going to do with a busload of kids on a Saturday morning for 50? You think they're just going to sit quietly and behave themselves? First thing we learned, if you don't have a plan for those kids, they got a plan for you. So we would do, and Karen and I, this is how I met and started serving with my wife. We weren't married. We were on the same in the same ministry, same bus. So we did all bus ministry together. Karen was fantastic at that. We'd decorate the bus. We'd have crazy days. Rob Smith was involved. We'd have Goldfish Sunday, where we'd had two buses competing with each other, and the bus that had the most kids on that Sunday morning or that Saturday morning, the other bus captain would have to eat a live goldfish. And I was the bus captain on my bus, and I told those kids, I'll kill every one of you. Rob Smith ended up eating that goldfish that day. And, you know, I think we had 50 kids to their 20. You know, I was like picking up kids we didn't even know. I kidnapped like five people that Saturday, and, you know, the police were looking for me. But, you know, we just packed that bus full of people and we went. And, you know, at that time I thought, this is nice. I mean, we're ministering to children. But I didn't realize the long-term potential impact on these young people's lives. I went to a bus conference, and this young man, about 25 years old, stood up, and he started to speak. He was eloquent. He was powerful. He was articulate. There was the presence of God when he spoke. And then he turned to Mr. Wally Beebe, Pastor Wally Beebe, Dr. Beebe. He turned to Dr. Beebe, and he said, Dr. Beebe, I want to thank you for picking me up with that bus when I was 4 years old. And everyone was stunned. This was a bus kid from a poor neighborhood, and God touched him. And now he was pastoring a church of like 500 people at 26, 27 years old. It was an amazing story. And I was at that bus conference, and I thought, I'm just not, I'm thinking of it as a, it's nice to do. It's a lot of work, getting tired at it. I want to quit. And then I saw that testimony at that bus conference I was with Eric, and Rob had gone, and Nick Corrado was there. We'd gone to South Carolina for this bus conference, drove all the way down there. And wow, it was just absolutely incredible. And I heard some great speakers. I heard Jack Hiles speak. I heard Wally Beebe speak. And then I heard one of them attack anybody who didn't use the King James Bible. And, you know, so we left after that, because then it turned into a King James conference. And I love the King James, but I'm not going to take a position to attack other pastors if they're not going to use a King James Bible. It just didn't make any sense. But boy, what an inspiring time it was to hear that young man speak. And I got back into Rome, and we started to minister to people. You know, now there are four or five young people that are still in church, still serving God today because of that bus ministry. And some of them are married and have children and are going to church in Rome. And some of them have been on the mission field. We've had two of those bus families went to Africa. I won't say their names, but just amazing fruit from that. But it was what Jesus was saying here. You know, whoever receives a little child, you know. And I want you to think of Sunday school as a great place to serve. And, you know, so we're not having Sunday school right now. We're going to soon. We're going to soon. But reaching young people for Christ, reaching old people for Christ, reaching anybody and serving is incredibly important. Don't we all kind of drive to be this super chicken who gets credit in the workplace for things? Which parents have the best kids at the baseball field? Who has the most athletic kids? You watch that sometimes in the baseball drafts and in the all-star season. You see, it's like, wow. Sometimes between husbands and wives this happens. Who has the most important job? Who's the most tired at the end of the day? You know. In the business world, people get caught up with job titles, perks, best clothes, nicest car. But there's two major needs in life that are not met through self-promotion. Now listen very carefully to me. I'm almost through. There are two very important needs in your life that will never be met by self-promotion or self-preservation. But they're met through serving. There are these two things: security and significance. Security and significance. We talk about security a lot of times when we talk about marriage, people living together versus being married. And I've said this before, you know, real love never flourishes without security. It doesn't flourish without security. That's why people who live together never really get to the depths of what real love is about, because there isn't a commitment. There isn't a, I'm with you till the end. No matter what. I'm with you to the end, no matter what. And I vow that I will die before. The only way I'm going to leave you is if I die. That's it. Or if you kill me. That's the agreement we have. You know? But that's the only way love can ever be expressed is through commitment, and the only way security is going to be expressed is through love and commitment. Serving one another means this: I'm committing myself to serve you and to love you. And it's in that serving that I find security. You know, job security is the thing people get really nervous about today. And a lot of folks lost their jobs in the last several months. I mean, this is really a problem. You know, I'm thankful that I didn't. You didn't fire me. You could have. Probably should have, but you didn't. You know, so job security is an issue for a lot of people. But, you know, I've always believed this. If you're willing to serve people and solve problems, you'll always have a job. even in your workplace. I tell young people this all the time. Hey, you know what? You start the job. Let's say you start the job as a custodian, or you start a job working in a restaurant, or you start a job somewhere at the bottom of the food chain. You are at the bottom of the pecking order. If you will serve people in your workplace, if you look around and you'll see there's a problem that I can solve, there's somebody that I can help. If you live your life that way at work, not only will you be promoted, but you'll always have a job. And if it isn't with that company, God will get you one with another one. See, security comes through serving, not through self-preservation or self-promotion. You try to promote yourself and inflate yourself. When you do get that job that you think that, hey, I've arrived, you're never going to really be secure in that place because you don't really know if you deserve to be there or not because you've self-promoted and you've stepped over everybody else to get there. Super chicken, well, it can always be replaced by another super chicken. There's always going to be a bigger chicken. There's always going to be somebody who's stronger. There's always going to be somebody who's a little bit smarter. There's always going to be somebody who's got more skills, more gifts. But you know what? There's only so many people that are willing to serve. There's only so many people that are willing to roll up their sleeves and do the dirty work of loving people, the dirty work of helping and doing whatever it takes. See, there's security in serving. And it matters. And oftentimes that means I'm going to place other people's desires before my own. This is a hard thing. But you learn it in marriage very quickly. You know? And you learn to love very quickly, unconditionally, or you're going to have a lot of problems. So subordinating your personal preferences is choosing God's way. Did you hear what I just said? When you subordinate your personal preferences for somebody else, for the benefit of somebody else, you have found God's way. Think about that. Hey, what's God's way in my marriage? Subordinate your own interests for the benefit of your spouse. That's God's way. How am I going to calm this crazy thing down that's going on at work? Subordinate your interests and serve. You'll find God's way. How am I going to calm down this dispute at church? Okay, everybody. I tell you what, I don't think we've had a church-wide dispute since I've been pastor. It's been amazing. It's a great, great family of God here, really. You are tremendous. Unless there's fighting going on behind the scenes that I don't know about, you're tremendous. I don't think we've ever had a church-wide argument about anything. But you know what I would say if there was one? I'd say, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to stop discussing the issue, and we're all going to come, and we're going to clean. And then we're going to go, and we're going to do the yard. And then we're going to go, and we're going to scrub the building on our hands and knees. And then we're going to go in the community, and we're going to bring people food, and we're going to spend the next 3 months serving. And if there's still a problem after 3 months of serving, find another pastor because I've done something wrong. You don't need me. Serve. Serve. Businesses need leaders that know how to serve. Companies need leaders that know how to serve. And they do it well. And they find creative ways to do it without compromising the integrity of their office. They know how to do it. Turn to John chapter 13, and you probably thought, oh yeah, well of course he's got to go here because this is Jesus serving. This is the washing of the feet. Of course we have to look at this. But I want you to look at a couple things in particular. The feast of the Passover, Jesus knew his hour had come, and that he was about to depart from this world and go to the Father. And having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. This is the key. He loved them. And there's no exception. Because there's 12 people that are going to get their feet washed in a minute here. And guess who one of them is? Who? Judas. And supper being ended, the devil already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he'd come from God and was going to God, rose from supper, laid aside his garments, took a towel, and girded himself. Now, you know what? This is a really important part of this, because these are not just symbols today. These are choices. I don't want you to look at the symbolism of what Jesus did as much as I want you to look at the choices that he made. Because once he laid aside his garments, really the serving became incidental. But this starts, he knew who he was and where he was going. You know, it says, he, knowing the Father had given all things in his hands, and he knew he'd come from God and was going to God. He was secure in his own identity. This is the number one thing that keeps people from serving, is insecurity. Because if I'm going to get on my knees, I can't do that now, my left knee is killing me. If I get on my knees and wash somebody else's feet, I'm going to have to be secure in who I am. He knew who he was. He knew where he was going. He knew God's plan. And so this was needed to be done. He needed to illustrate this. The garments that he laid aside, you could look in Philippians 1 and Philippians 2 and see the symbolism that he made himself of no reputation and took on the form of a servant. But this is really humility and a choice. To lay something aside. The choice to lay aside my pride, to lay aside my agenda, to lay aside my preferences, to lay aside what I think you're thinking about me, lay that aside and just serve. If you're going to serve, something's going to have to be laid aside. This is why a lot of people don't serve. They can't lay aside anything. Well, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to have to lay aside this thing. I remember we were trying to schedule a Bible study. And a good friend of mine was going to participate in this Bible study. And we were very excited about it. And the best night for everyone else in this group was Thursday night. But this man said, he literally said this, I can't on Thursday night. Why? That's when Survivor is on. Dead serious. And I laughed. I said, okay, so Thursday night works then? No. Dead serious. No. Can't do Thursday night. Got to pick another night or I can't do it. Couldn't lay aside a ridiculous television program. Wow. And as a result, wanted everyone else to be flexible to him. We did the Bible study on Thursday. And because I'll lay things aside for somebody, but if you're not willing to lay aside a television program, I don't think anybody's obligated to make any adjustments for that. You know, if you were telling me that's the only time you could visit your sick family member somewhere, we'll figure something else out. But for a television program, well, I'd love to help, but Saturday mornings are my time. Whose time? Say it. Whose time? Ah. Have you been bought with a price? Does the Corinthians say that you are not your own? Hello? Yeah, it kind of says that, doesn't it? You got responsibilities and things like that, but you got to think that through. The choice to lay something aside, my rights, my preferences, my time, my reputation. In a fuller sense, Romans 12 says, present yourself a living sacrifice. Because that's where you discover the will of God, in that presentation, in that sacrifice. That's what Romans 12, 1 and 2 says. You're going to discover God's way by being a living sacrifice, by laying aside some things. 1 Corinthians 6:19 says, I've been bought with a price. I am not my own. Then he took a towel and girded himself. This is a choice to prepare. He began to prepare, you know. To serve is to prepare. You know, if you wing everything in life, if everything for you is wing it, you won't be effective. We should all know that, right? Everybody know that? That the winger is not effective. The person who wings everything, you're plowing through to get everything done and winging it all, people are going to get hurt. Being prepared is an immensely important thing in serving. No shortcuts to that either. And then he pours this basin, this water, he pours water into a basin. And this is really a choice to pour out your life. This is a choice to pour it all out, to put everything into it. If I surrender my rights, I'll be taken advantage of. Yeah, maybe. But not by God. If I surrender my agenda to God, I'll never get what I want. But if I don't surrender to God, I'll never discover what I really need. Would you rather have what you want or have what you need? Think about it for a minute. How long can you survive with what you want without getting what you need? How long can you live on want? And if I'm only wanting to get what I want and never wanting to learn what I need, everyone around me is going to be miserable because I'm going to be a want, 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 want. And people will be dehumanized because I'm either going to make them an obstacle from getting me what I want or an instrument in getting what I want. So I become the master manipulator because want comes before need. So if I serve and I lay my agenda aside, I'm not going to get what I want. I want that. I want to be that. I want to go here. I want to have this. I want to have that. But if I serve, I begin to discover what I need. What I need is security. What I need is to be significant. And people who just want, 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 they're not significant. What does the selfish person ever do that's significant? When I mean significant, I mean life transforming for other people. If I serve other people, I'll be thought a fool and thought little of. I don't want to be the servant running around for everybody. I don't want to be everybody else's servant. Can I ask you a question? Whose opinion of your life matters anyway? Really? Who's the person that you seek approval from more than anybody else? That's the one you want to seek. That's the one you want to serve. Serving is a series of choices to have a life that matters. It's a series of choices to have a life that matters. If I'm not willing to serve, my life will not. All lives matter. Okay. You're kind of missing the point. Not that way. The significant, profound impact on people. I don't want to be just somebody who lived my life and survived and got through it. I want to be somebody who mattered to others, who made a difference in other people's lives. I know that's what you want. If that's not what you want, you've got to think a little bit about this. Hopefully this will help you to do that. But serving is really a series of choices to have a life that matters, to be a person that makes an impact on the world. Father, help us, Lord, to serve. The world needs people to serve right now. It'd be really easy to get into fights. What the world really needs is servants. To serve deeply, to serve profoundly, to serve in availability to our neighbors. Be a blessing in our own communities. So we pray, Father, you'd help us. Lead us and guide us to do these kinds of things. For that is really what it's like to be Christ-like. As you transform us from the inside out. In Jesus' name, amen.